Up to the pros, the Boston Red Sox beat the LA Dodgers 8-4 last night in Game 1 of the World Series. Game 2 is tonight. And that's been the news on the World Series. Brings us to Stroman on Sports, where we will begin our hour. We're joined here on the phone by Dr. Debbie Stroman, sports commentator, star athlete in her own right, and the host of Cover 2 here on WCHL evenings during football season. Debbie Stroman joining us on the phone. How are you?
Doing well. Love to have this fall weather here. I think it kind of came upon us faster than we wanted, but I think that most people feel that this is their favorite time of the year, so let's enjoy it.
Absolutely. Fall or spring, one or the other, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we're talking about the pros right now because the World Series has just gotten underway. Boston with a 1-0 lead on the LA Dodgers. NBA season getting underway as well. Everyone, of course, picking Golden State to win the title again for what would be the third straight year. And that leads to a question that I know you wanted to talk about today, which is that difference between big market and small market teams. How much are big market teams like the LA Dodgers and the Boston Red Sox and the Golden State Warriors destined to dominate and win national championships over and over again? And how much of a chance do smaller market teams actually have to cut into that and have a chance to win titles of their own?
Well, absolutely. And I think that a lot of people don't want to talk about the economics or the commercialization of college sports, but we know it is a business, especially Division I. NCAA, it's definitely big business. A lot, if not everything, is driven by money. But it's very clear in professional sports. And so we have teams, whether it's Major League Baseball, football, NFL, or basketball, the NBA, there's this trend that the larger cities and the owners who can buy their teams in those cities, they definitely have an increased probability of winning. So it begs the question, why do we even believe going into every season? And I was thinking, quite possibly, everybody likes an underdog. Mm-hmm. We're looking for something to believe in. We have daily stressors. There are things that we want to escape from. And sports seems to be that, even though at the beginning of the season, we know we really don't have a chance to win a championship or a title. And then I would say marketing matters. Each year we're fed data and hype that it is possible that your team can actually do it. And so we buy into that. But again, it's all been structured. It's all very, very much driven by the money that's spent by the owners.
So it's kind of looking at the actual data from just the last few years in terms of, and really thinking about baseball and basketball, just with those two leagues on our mind. Prompted by your question from earlier today. And small market teams have actually done kind of okay in both leagues in recent years. It's Boston versus LA this year in the World Series, but the Milwaukee Brewers got within a game of making it to the World Series. You had Cleveland making it to the series in 2016, Kansas City making it 2 years in a row and winning in 2015, Detroit made it in 2012, and I think we can call them a small market team now as that metro population has dropped a bit. And in the NBA, you've got Cleveland winning titles, San Antonio winning titles, Oklahoma City making it to the finals. And I don't know how you would classify Golden State because they dominate the Bay Area, but it's an Oakland-based team. And I think if we had this conversation 10 years ago, we would have said, oh, Golden State's a small market team for sure.
Well, there's no doubt we are talking about how do we define the market size.
Mm.
It's hard to say that, you know, a city like Kansas City is not a major city. When you think about the Midwest, there's only a handful of cities that you think about that have a large number of people in a concentrated area. But when you think of it from the sports perspective, we view it as small or mid-major.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have those asterisks. The one that I like to point out, and I think clearly to me, it is definitely because of a Hall of Fame coach, and that's San Antonio Spurs of the NBA. Winning the titles. I think they have five titles, 99, 2003, 05, 07, and 11. And when Pop leaves that franchise, that's going to be very, very tough for them to bring back that level of success. When you think about these mid-major cities, and we can just speak for our own Charlotte and what their trouble with in terms of the Panthers and the Hornets is trying to convince a superstar to come to that city when you know you aren't necessarily going to get the same branding and marketing power that you would in L.A., Chicago, or New York. Mm-hmm. Then you think about what you can actually build in terms of your foundation and companies that you want to build. I think we can all look at LeBron as an example. Even though Cleveland arguably is a major city in the United States, he still had to go to L.A. or even New York to do the type of work in terms of entertainment. So it's just a challenge for these franchises.
So let's look at the ultimate small market team. And as you were talking about Kansas City and Cleveland and the Midwestern cities that are big cities but considered small markets, I started running through the country in my head. The ultimate small market team that is actually very successful and has been for a long time is the Green Bay Packers in the NFL. So, and that's a really small market, a ways north of Milwaukee. What is that? Maybe 50 or 100,000 people in that mm-hmm. city, and they have been a dominant force in pro football for many years. So what does it take for a small market team, either quote-unquote small market, or in the case of Green Bay, an actual small market team, to get to that point where they are successful, where they go from being a small market like a Golden State 2000, 2005, to a Golden State in 2015, 2016, 2018, where they're winning titles?
Well, I'll say it's the tale of two cities. So the example would be Buffalo. So mm-hmm. you have Buffalo and Green Bay, and the first thing people would say, well, you need buy-in from everybody. Well, if anyone's been to a Buffalo football game, you know that they have buy-in from government, private sector, nonprofit, citizens, you know, young, old. Buffalo has the football fever just like Green Bay. And so then you say, well, who would want to go and live in a cold city in North or Midwest? Well, Buffalo and Green Bay are mm-hmm. exactly the same. They are cold cities. And so you think about, okay, how about ownership? Well, here's quite possibly the difference. So the Green Bay was birthed out of the people, in the sense that it's the only professional franchise where the people actually own the team. There isn't one particular owner that's been, I should say, family owned, where it's passed down like the Steelers and the Rooneys. And Buffalo doesn't have that. They had a long-time owner. But I would say you've got to have the type of Hall of Fame coach that will go there and will stay. But sadly, Buffalo has been close, and I apologize to all the Buffalo fans out there who were beaten many, many times over, in particular during 1993, 1994. You know, remember those years were certainly a great, great team. You thought that they would win the championship, but they weren't able to. But since then, they've continued to struggle, just continued to struggle. Again, all the hype at the beginning of the year that they're going to do something in the American Football Conference, but they don't. And then Green Bay, to your point, I would say that one player can't make a difference with football. Definitely a bigger chance with basketball, just due to the numbers mm-hmm. and what you can affect. But with football having different players on both sides of the ball, it's very, very challenging. Now, they do have a star quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, which has kept them going over the more recent years. And then they had a star defensive player, and I can't believe, Reggie White, mm-hmm. On the defensive end, who kept them alive probably, I would say, maybe about 10, 12 years ago. And so it's just a unique place. And, you know, I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan, so I really don't want to talk much about the Packers, those cheeses.
Hey, I'm a Lions fan, so I mean, the less we talk about the Packers, the better. I've got friends from Buffalo who forget football. They're still upset about Brett Hall scoring to beat them in the Stanley Cup Finals, too.
That is definitely taking you back.
So we're speaking with Dr. Debbie Stroman. So let's bring it down to the college level, because we've got the same problem between big market and small market, or in this case, Division I, kind of Power 5 conference schools versus those mid-major schools here. And I think the problem might even be more stark at the college level, because at least when you talk about the pros, you might not have much of a window as a small market team to win a championship. But if you're a Cleveland Indians, you can have a couple of years where you're challenging. If you're a Milwaukee Brewers, you can do that, and you get to the playoffs and anything can happen. The mid-major schools at the college level, and we're talking both football definitely, and to a lesser extent basketball, don't even have a chance at all. At least in basketball, if you make it to the NCAA tournament, you could be a Butler or a George Mason or a VCU and go on a run. But thinking about football, you've got a school like Central Florida that goes undefeated all year last year and has absolutely no chance. They're still unbeaten this year, and they still have absolutely no chance. So what does it take to break into the top tier if you're a second tier or a mid-major or a quote-unquote small market school at the college level?
Well, I'll say no chance, but I'll say no love. Mm-hmm. You just don't. The power structure is so complex. Some people would say unfair, but when you take a team like Central Florida and not to get an opportunity to be in the college football playoff, or not given a chance to play in a major bowl on New Year's Day, it's definitely more difficult. But again, I would say go back to the economics. You have to look at the schools that are private that fund football in a major way. So the case there would be Notre Dame, even though they've been down for a number of years. Yet they still, because of their nationwide donors, their fan base, they travel well, they still are able to negotiate these unique contracts where they're on TV. Even though they're a part of the ACC now, football in a limited capacity, but they just have the dollars. And so that brings that attention there, plus the history and tradition. But you're right. In terms of these other schools, as much as you can get your fan base to pay to have the nice facilities, which will attract the recruits, it is very, very hard in football. Basketball, you're seeing a bit difference because some of your private schools, like a Villanova, they're able to put a lot of money into their basketball program and have success. But still, I would argue it's your big state schools that have the bigger programs and the money, and they're able to fund basketball to the extent that they can go to the Final Four and even and possibly win.
And the one thing that we should mention kind of as we wrap up this conversation is that if we were having this conversation 50 or 60 years ago, it would be almost exactly the reverse. If we think about Major League Baseball, it would have been the New York Yankees winning the national championship or the World Series every single year and no other team having any chance at all of breaking in. Whereas if you go back to college football and college basketball especially, you had schools that were kind of small market, non-dominating, schools that don't really have much of a basketball tradition even then, having a chance to win the NCAA title, and the same thing in football as well. And somehow over the last 50 or 60 years, that's flipped a little bit to the point where now some other team besides the Yankees has a chance to win the World Series every single year. But when you look at the NCAA in football and basketball, it's kind of the same 10 schools over and over again. So something can happen to move the dial. It's just a question of what. And I think you're probably right that it's money.
Yes. And in fact, I'll throw out some schools in terms of college basketball championships. People probably did not know that Holy Cross won a championship in 1947, LaSalle out of Philly in 1954. So definitely some very, very small schools were able to do that. So moving forward, I would say the next wave or the next trend will be technology and how you can leverage technology and analytics to make your program more efficient, and not just from X's and O's, but we're talking about marketing dollars. How you can engage your fans so that they become captured at a young age, 12 years old, 15 years old, so they're lifetime fans and they're willing to pay the money for tickets and for all types of merchandise. And then you think about those young athletes who are moved by the technology, whether it's seeing something on VR that draws them into that program and then later on they want to actually play for that team. Or when it's time for a professional contract, you hear young men say, oh, I've always wanted to be a Dallas Cowboy, or I've always wanted to play for the New York Yankees. Well, I think technology will make the difference in the future. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next 5 to 10 years.
And that's Stroman on Sports. Dr. Debbie Stroman, thank you so much.
Thank you.